looking for you. His friends waiting down by the alley wall. Three others are on their way over, climbing up the alley wall on all the big bins.
I wish Silas was here. He'd make short work of them. Or Miss Lupescu.
You don't need them.
Where's Mum?
Down by the alley wall.
Tell her I've hidden Scarlet in the back of the Frobisher's place. Ask her to keep an eye on her if anything happens to me.
Bald ran through the darkened graveyard. The only way into the northwest part of the graveyard was through the Egyptian walk, and to get there, he would have to go past the little man with the black silk rope, a man who was looking for him, and who wanted him dead. He was nobody Owens, he told himself. He was a part of the graveyard. He would be fine. He nearly missed the little man, the Jack called Ketch, as he hurried into the Egyptian walk. The man was almost part of the shadows. Bod breathed in, faded as deeply as he could fade, and moved past the man like dust blown on an evening breeze. He walked down the green-hung length of the Egyptian walk, and then, with an effort of will, he became as obvious as he could, and kicked at a pebble. He saw the shadow by the arch detach itself and come after him, almost as silent as the dead. Bod pushed through the trailing ivy that blocked the walk and into the northwest corner of the graveyard. He would have to time this just right, he knew. Too fast, and the man would lose him. Yet if he moved too slowly, a black silk rope would wrap itself around his neck, taking his breath with it and all his tomorrows. He pushed noisily through the tangle of ivy, disturbing one of the graveyard's many foxes, which sprinted off into the undergrowth. It was a jungle here, of fallen headstones and headless statues, of trees and holly bushes, of slippery piles of half-rotted fallen leaves. But it was a jungle that Bod had explored since he had been old enough to walk and to wander. Now he was hurrying carefully, stepping from root tangle of ivy to stone to earth, confident that this was his graveyard. He could feel the graveyard itself trying to hide him, to protect him, to make him vanish. And he fought it, worked to be seen. He saw Nehemiah trot and hesitated.
Hola, young Bod. I hear that excitement is the master of the hour, that you fling yourself through these dominions like a comet across the firmament. What's the word, good Bod?
Stand there. Just where you are. Look back the way I came. Tell me when he comes close.
Bod skirted the ivy-covered Carstairs grave, and then he stood panting as if out of breath, with his back to his pursuer. And he waited. It was only for a few seconds, but it felt like a small forever.
He's here, lad. About 20 paces behind you.
The Jack called Ketch saw the boy in front of him. He pulled his black silk cord tight between his hands. It had been stretched around many necks over the years, and had been the end of every one of the people it had embraced. It was very soft and very strong, and invisible to X-rays. Ketch's moustache moved, but nothing else. He had his prey in his sight, and did not want to startle it. He began to advance, silent as a shadow. The boy straightened up. Jack Ketch darted forward, his polished black shoes almost soundless on the leaf mould.
He comes, lad.
The boy turned around, and Jack Ketch made a leap towards him. And Mr. Ketch felt the world tumbling away beneath him. He grabbed at the world with one gloved hand, but tumbled down and down into the old grave, all of 20 feet, before crash-landing on Mr. Carstairs' coffin, splintering the coffin lid, and his ankle at the same time.
"That's one,"
said Bod, calmly, although he felt anything but calm.
"Elegantly accomplished. I shall compose an ode. Would you like to stay and listen?
No time. Where are the other men?
Three of them are on the southwestern path, heading up the hill.
And there's another. Right now, he's just walking around the chapel. He's the one who's been all around the graveyard for the last month. But there's something different about him.
Keep an eye on the man in with Mr. Carstairs. And please apologize to Mr. Carstairs for me.
He ducked under a pine branch and loped around the hill. On the paths when it suited him, off the paths, jumping from monument to stone when that was quicker. He passed the old apple tree.
There's four of them still. Four of them, and all killers. And the rest of them won't all of them fall into open graves to oblige you.
Hello, Liza. I thought you were angry at me.
I might be, and I mightn't,
she said. Nothing more than a voice.
But I'm not going to let them cut you up, no how.
Then trip them for me. Trip them and confuse them and slow them down. Can you do that?
While he runs away again. Nobody owns. Why don't you just fade and hide in your mam's nice tomb, where they'll never find you, and soon enough Silas will be back to take care of them.
Maybe he will, and maybe he won't. I'll meet you by the lightning tree.
I am still not talking to you,
said Liza Hempstock's voice, proud as a peacock and pert as a sparrow.
Actually, you are. I mean, we're talking right now.
Only during this emergency. After that, not a word.
Bod made for the lightning tree, an oak that had been burned by lightning 20 years ago, and now was nothing more than a blackened limb clutching at the sky. He had an idea. It was not fully formed. It depended on whether he could remember Miss Lupescu's lessons, remember everything he had seen and heard as a child. It was harder to find the grave than he had expected, even looking for it. But he found it, an ugly grave, tipped at an odd angle, its stone topped by a headless, water-stained angel that had the appearance of a gargantuan fungus. It was only when he touched it and felt the chill that he knew it for certain. He sat down on the grave, forced himself to become entirely visible.
You've not faded. Anyone could find you.
Good. I want them to find me.
More know Jack Fool than Jack Fool knows.
The moon was rising. It was huge now and low in the sky. Bod wondered if it would be overdoing it if he began to whistle.
I can see him.
A man ran towards him, tripping and stumbling. Two other men close behind. Bod was aware of the dead, clustered around them, watching the scene. But he forced himself to ignore them. He made himself more comfortable on the ugly grave. He felt like the bait in a trap. And it was not a good feeling. The bull-like man was the first to reach the grave, followed closely by the man with the white hair, who had done all the talking, and the tall blonde man. Bod stayed where he was.
Ah, the elusive Dorian boy, I presume. Astonishing. There's our Jack Frost hunting the whole world over. And here you are, just where he left you 13 years ago.
That man killed my family.
Indeed he did.
Why?
Does it matter? You're never going to tell anyone.
Then it's no skin off your nose to tell me, is it?
The white-haired man barked a laugh.
Ha! Funny boy. What I want to know is, how have you lived in a graveyard for 13 years without anyone catching wise?
I'll answer your question, if you answer mine.
You don't talk to Mr. Dandy like that, little snot. I split you. I will.
The white-haired man took another step closer to the grave.
Hush, Jack Tar. All right. An answer for an answer. We, my friends and I, are members of a fraternal organization known as the Jacks of All Trades, or the Knaves, or by other names. We go back an extremely long way. We know. We remember things that most people have forgotten. The old knowledge.
Magic. You know a little magic.
The man nodded agreeably.
If you want to call it that, but it is a very specific sort of magic. There's a magic you take from death. Something leaves the world, something else comes into it.
You killed my family for what? For magic powers? That's ridiculous.
No, we killed you for protection. A long time ago, one of our people, this was back in Egypt in pyramid days, he foresaw that one day there would be a child born who would walk the borderland between the living and the dead. That if this child grew to adulthood, it would mean the end of our order and all we stand for. We had people casting nativities before London was a village. We had your family in our sights before New Amsterdam became New York. And we sent what we thought was the best and the sharpest and the most dangerous of all the jacks to deal with you. To do it properly, so we could take all the bad juju and make it work for us instead, and keep everything tickety-boo for another 5,000 years. Only he didn't.
Bod looked at the three men.
So where is he? Why isn't he here?
We can take care of you. He's got a good nose on him, has our Jack Frost. He's on the trail of your little girlfriend. Can't leave any witnesses. Not to something like this.
Bod leaned forward, dug his hands into the wild weed grass that grew on the unkempt grave.
Come and get me.
The blonde man grinned. The bull-necked man lunged. And, yes, even Mr. Dandy took several steps forward. Bod pushed his fingers as deeply as he could into the grass, and he pulled his lips back from his teeth, and he said three words in a language that was already ancient before the Indigo Man was born.
Skarg! Seg! Kavaga!
He opened the ghoul gate. The grave swung up like a trapdoor. In the deep hole below the door, Bod could see stars, a darkness filled with glimmering lights. The bullman, Mr. Tar, at the edge of the hole could not stop, and stumbled, surprised, into the darkness. Mr. Nimble jumped toward Bod, his arms extended, leaping over the hole. Bod watched as the man stopped in the air at the zenith of his spring and hung there for a moment, before he was sucked through the ghoul gate, down and down. Mr. Dandy stood at the edge of the ghoul gate, on a lip of stone, and looked down into the darkness beneath. Then he raised his eyes to Bod, and thin-lipped, he smiled.
I don't know what you just did, but it didn't work.
He pulled his gloved hand out of his pocket, holding a gun, pointed directly at Bod.
I should have just done this 13 years ago. You can't trust other people. If it's important, you have to do it yourself.
A desert wind came up from the open ghoul gate, hot and dry, with grit in it.
There's a desert down there. If you look for water, you should find some. There's things to eat if you look hard, but don't antagonize the night gaunts. Avoid Ghoulheim. The ghouls might wipe your memories and make you into one of them. Or they might wait until you've rotted down, and then eat you. Either way, you can do better.
The gun barrel did not waver.
Why are you telling me this?
Bod pointed across the graveyard.
Because of them.
And as he said it, as Mr. Dandy glanced away only for a moment, Bod faded. Mr. Dandy's eyes flickered away and back. But Bod was no longer by the broken statue. From deep in the hole, something called, like the lonely wail of a night bird. Mr. Dandy looked around, his forehead a slash, his body a mass of indecision and rage.
Where are you? The deuce take you!
Where are you?
He thought he heard a voice say,
Ghoul gates are made to be opened and then closed again. You can't leave them open. They want to close.
The lip of the hole shuddered and shook. Mr. Dandy had been in an earthquake once years before in Bangladesh. It felt like that. The earth juddered, and Mr. Dandy fell. Would have fallen into the darkness, but he caught hold of the fallen headstone, threw his arms about it and locked on. He did not know what was beneath him, only that he had no wish to find out. The earth shook, and he felt the headstone begin to shift beneath his weight. He looked up. The boy was there, looking down at him curiously.
I'm going to let the gate close now. I think if you keep holding on to that thing, it might close on you and crush you. Or it might just absorb you and make you into part of the gate. Don't know. But I'm giving you a chance. More than you ever gave my family.
A ragged judder. Mr. Dandy looked up into the boy's grey eyes, and he swore.
You can't ever escape us. We're the jacks of all trades. We're everywhere. It's not over!
It is for you. The end of your people and all you stand for. Like your man in Egypt predicted. You didn't kill me. You were everywhere. Now it's all over.
Then Bod smiled.
That's what Silas is doing, isn't it? That's where he is.
Mr. Dandy's face confirmed everything that Bod had suspected. And what Mr. Dandy might have said to that, Bod would never know. Because the man let go of the headstone and tumbled, slowly, down into the open ghoul gate.
Where, Carrados?
The ghoul gate was a grave once again. Nothing more. Something was tugging at his sleeve. Fortinbras Bartleby looked up at him.
Bod! The man by the chapel! He's going up the hill!
The man Jack followed his nose. He had left the others, not least because the stink of Jack Dandy's cologne made finding anything subtler impossible. He could not find the boy by scent, not here. The boy smelled like the graveyard, but the girl smelled like her mother's house, like the dab of perfume she had touched to her neck before school that morning. She smelled like a victim, too, like fear sweat, thought Jack, like his quarry. And whatever she was, the boy would be too, sooner or later. His hand closed around the handle of his knife and he walked up the hill. He was almost at the top of the hill when it occurred to him, a hunch he knew was a truth, that Jack Dandy and the rest of them were gone.
Good. There's always room at the top.
The man Jack's own rise through the order had slowed and stopped after he had failed to kill all of the Dorian family. It was as if he had no longer been trusted. Now, soon, everything would change. At the top of the hill, the man Jack lost the girl's scent. He knew she was near. He retraced his steps almost casually. Caught her perfume again about 50 feet away, beside a small mausoleum with a closed metal gateway. He pulled on the gate, and it swung wide. Her scent was strong now. He could smell that she was afraid. He pulled down the coffins one by one from their shelves, and let them clatter onto the ground, shattering the old wood, spilling their contents onto the mausoleum floor. No, she was not hiding in any of those. Then where? He examined the wall. Solid. He went down on his hands and knees, pulled the last coffin out and reached back. His hand found an opening.
Scarlet!
He called, trying to remember how he would have called her name when he was Mr. Frost. But he could not even find that part of himself any longer. He was the man Jack now, and that was all he was. On his hands and knees, he crawled through the hole in the wall. When Scarlet heard the crashing noise from above, she made her way carefully down the steps, her left hand touching the wall, her right hand holding the little LED keyring, which cast just enough light to allow her to see where she was placing her feet. She made it to the bottom of the stone steps and edged back in the open chamber, her heart thumping. She was scared. Scared of nice Mr. Frost and his scarier friends. Scared of this room and its memories. Even if she were honest, a little afraid of Bod. He was no longer a quiet boy with a mystery, a link to her childhood. He was something different, something not quite human. She thought,
I wonder what Mum's thinking right now. She'll be phoning Mr. Frost's house over and over to find out when I'm going to get back. If I get out of this alive, I'm going to force her to get me a phone. It's ridiculous. I'm the only person in my year who doesn't have her own phone, practically. I miss my mum.
She had not thought anyone human could move that silently through the dark. But a gloved hand closed upon her mouth, and a voice that was only barely recognisable as Mr. Frost's said, without emotion,
Do anything clever. Do anything at all. And I will cut your throat. Nod, if you understand me.
Scarlet nodded. Bod saw the chaos on the floor of the Frobisher Mausoleum, the fallen coffins with their contents scattered across over the aisle. There were many Frobishers and Frobishers and several Pettifers, all in various states of upset and consternation.
He's already down there.
Thank you.
He clambered through the hole into the inside of the hill, and he went down the stairs. Bod saw as the dead see. He saw the steps, and he saw the chamber at the bottom, and when he got halfway down the steps, he saw the man Jack holding Scarlet. He had her arm twisted up behind her back, and a large, wicked boning knife at her neck. The man Jack looked up in the darkness.
Hello, boy.
Bod said nothing. He concentrated on his fade. Took another step.
You think I can't see you? And you're right. I can't, not really. But I can smell your fear. And I can hear you move and hear you breathe. And now that I know about your clever vanishing trick, I can feel you. Say something now. Say it so I can hear it, or I start to cut little pieces out of the young lady. Do you understand me?
Yes,
said Bod, his voice echoing in the chamber room.
I understand.
Good. Now come here. Let's have a little chat.
Bod began to walk down the steps. He concentrated on the fear, on raising the level of panic in the room, of making the terror something tangible.
Stop that. Whatever it is you're doing, don't do it.
Bod let it go.
You think that you can do your little magics on me? Do you know what I am, boy?
You're a Jack. You killed my family. And you should have killed me.
Jack raised an eyebrow.
I should have killed you.
Oh, yes. The old man said that if you let me grow to adulthood, your order would be destroyed. I did. You failed. And you lost.
My order goes back before Babylon. Nothing can harm it.
They didn't tell you, did they?
Bod was standing 5 paces from the man, Jack.
Those four, they were the last of the Jacks. What was it? Krakow and Vancouver and Melbourne? all gone.
Please, Bod, make him let go of me.
Don't worry,
said Bod, with a calm he did not feel. He said to Jack,
There's no point in hurting her. There's no point in killing me. Don't you understand? There isn't even an order of Jacks of all trades. Not anymore.
Jack nodded thoughtfully.
If this is true, and if I am now a Jack all alone, then I have an excellent reason for killing you both.
Bod said nothing.
Pride. Pride in my work. Pride in finishing what I began.
What are you doing?
Bod's hair prickled. He could feel a smoke tendril presence twining through the room.
It's not me. It's the Sleer. It guards the treasure that's buried here.
Don't lie.
He's not lying. It's true.
True? Buried treasure? Don't make me...
The Sleer guards the treasure for the Master.
Who said that?
Asked the man Jack, looking around.
You heard it?
I heard it. Yes.
I didn't hear anything.
What is this place, boy? Where are we?
Before Bod could speak, the Sleer's voice spoke, echoing through the chamber.
This is the place of the treasure. This is the place of
Jack?
The man, Jack, tilted his head on one side.
It's good to hear my name in your mouth, boy. If he'd used it before, I could have found you sooner.
Jack, what was my real name? What did my family call me?
Why should that matter to you now?
The Sleer told me to find my name. What was it?
Let me see, was it Peter? Or Paul? Or Roderick? You look like a Roderick. Maybe you're a Stephen.
He was playing with the boy.
You might as well tell me. You're going to kill me anyway.
Jack shrugged and nodded in the darkness, as if to say, obviously.
I want you to let the girl go. Let Scarlet go.
Jack peered into the darkness.
That's an altar stone. Isn't it?
I suppose so.
And a knife? And a cup? And a brooch?
He was smiling now in the darkness. Bod could see it on his face, a strange, delighted smile that seemed out of place on that face, a smile of discovery and of understanding. Scarlet couldn't see anything but a blackness that sometimes erupted in flashes inside her eyeballs, but she could hear the delight in Jack's voice.
So, the Brotherhood is over, and the Convocation is at an end. And yet, if there are no more Jacks of all trades but me, what does it matter?
There can be a new Brotherhood. More powerful than the last.
This is perfect. Look at us. We are in a place for which my people have hunted for thousands of years, with everything necessary for the ceremony waiting for us. It makes you believe in providence, doesn't it? Or in the massed prayers of all the Jacks who have gone before us, that at our lowest ebb, we are given this.
Bod could feel the Sleer listening to Jack's words, could feel a low susurrus of excitement building in the chamber.
I am going to put out my hand, boy. Scarlet, My knife is still at your throat. Do not try to run when I let go of you. Boy, you will place the cup and the knife and the brooch in my hand.
The treasure of the sphere, it always comes back. We guard it for the master.
Bod bent down, took the objects from the altar stone, put them in Jack's open, gloved hand. Jack grinned.
Scarlet, I am going to release you. When I take the knife away, I want you to lie face down on the ground with your hands behind your head. Move or try anything, and I will kill you painfully. Do you understand?
She gulped. Her mouth was dry, but she took one shaky step forward. Her right arm, which had been twisted up to the small of her back, was now numb, and she felt only pins and needles in her shoulder. She lay down, her cheek resting on the packed earth.
We are dead,
she thought. And it was not even tinged with emotion. It felt as if she were watching something happening to other people. A surreal drama that had turned into a game of murder in the dark. She heard the noise of Jack taking hold of Bod.
Let her go!
If you do everything I say, I won't kill her. I won't even hurt her.
I don't believe you. She can identify you.
No.
The adult voice seemed certain.
She can't. 10,000 years and the knife is still sharp.
The admiration in the voice was palpable.
Boy, go kneel on that altar stone, hands behind your back, now.
It has been so long.
But all Scarlet heard was a slithering noise, as if of enormous coils winding around the chamber. But the man Jack heard.
You want to know your name, boy, before I spill your blood on the stone?
Bod felt the cold of the knife at his neck, and in that moment, Bod understood. Everything slowed, everything came into focus.
I know my name. I'm Nobody Owens. That's who I am.
And kneeling on the cold altar stone, it all seemed very simple.
Sleer, do you still want a master?
The Sleer guards the treasure until the master returns.
Well, haven't you finally found the master you've been looking for?
He could sense the Sleer writhing and expanding, hear a noise like the scratching of 1,000 dead twigs, as if something huge and muscular was snaking its way around the inside of the chamber. And then, for the first time, Bod saw the Sleer. Afterwards, he was never able to describe what he had seen. Something huge, yes, something with the body of an enormous snake, but with the head of a... what? There were three of them. Three heads. Three necks. The faces were dead, as if someone had constructed dolls from parts of the corpses of humans and of animals. The faces were covered in purple patterns, tattooed in swirls of indigo, turning the dead faces into strange, expressive, monstrous things. The faces of the Sleer nuzzled the air about Jack tentatively, as if they wanted to stroke or caress him.
What's happening? What is it? What does it do?
It's called the Sleer. It guards the place. It needs a master to tell it what to do.
Jack hefted the flint knife in his hand.
Beautiful. Of course. It's been waiting for me.
Then yes, obviously I am its new master.
The sphere encircled the interior of the chamber.
Master,
it said, like a dog who had waited patiently for too long. It said,
Master,
again, as if testing the word to see how it tasted. And it tasted good. So it said one more time, with a sigh of delight and of longing,
Master!
Jack looked down at Bod.
13 years ago I missed you, and now we are reunited. The end of one order, the beginning of another. Goodbye, boy.
With one hand, he lowered the knife to the boy's throat. The other held the goblet.
Bod. Not boy. Bod. Sleer, what will you do with your new master?
The Sleer sighed.
We will protect him until the end of time. The Sphere will hold him in its coils forever and never let him endure the dangers of the world.
Then protect him. Now.
I am your master. You will obey me.
The Sphere has waited so long. So long a time.
It began to loop its huge, lazy coils around the man Jack. The man Jack dropped the goblet. Now he had a knife in each hand, a flint knife, and a knife with a black bone handle.
Get back. Keep away from me. Don't get any closer!
He slashed out with the knife as the Sphere twined about him and in a huge crushing movement engulfed the man Jack in its coils. Bod ran over to Scarlet and helped her up.
I want to see. I want to see what's happening.
She pulled out her LED light and turned it on. What Scarlet saw was not what Bod saw. She did not see the Sphere, and that was a mercy. She saw the man Jack, though. She saw the fear on his face, which made him look like Mr. Frost had once looked. In his terror, he was once more the nice man who had driven her home. He was floating in the air, 5, then 10 feet above the ground, slashing wildly at the air with 2 knives, trying to stab something she could not see, in a display that was obviously having no effect. Mr. Frost, the man Jack, whoever he was forced away from them, pulled back until he was spread-eagled, arms and legs wide and flailing against the side of the chamber wall. It seemed to Scarlet that Mr. Frost was being forced through the wall, pulled into the rock, was being swallowed up by it. Now there was nothing visible but a face. He was shouting wildly, desperately, shouting at Bod to call the thing off to save him. Please, please. And then the man's face was pulled through the wall, and the voice was silenced. Bod walked back to the altar stone. He picked up the stone knife and the goblet and the brooch from the ground, and he replaced them where they belonged. He left the black metal knife where it fell.
I thought you said the Sphere couldn't hurt people. I thought all it could do was frighten us.
Yes. but it wanted a master to protect. It told me so.
You mean you knew? You knew that would happen?
Yes. I hoped it would.
He helped her up the steps and out into the chaos of the Frobisher Mausoleum.
I'll need to clean this all up.
Scarlet tried not to look at the things on the floor. They stepped out into the graveyard. Scarlet said dully once more,
"You knew that would happen."
This time Bod said nothing. She looked at him as if unsure of what she was looking at.
"So you knew that the Slayer would take him? Was that why you hid me down there, was it? What was I then? Bait?"
"It wasn't like that. We're still alive, aren't we? And he won't trouble us any longer."
Scarlet could feel the anger and the rage welling up inside her. The fear had gone, and now all she was left with was the need to lash out, to shout. She fought the urge.
"And what about those other men? Did you kill them too?"
"I didn't kill anyone."
"Then where are they?"
"One of them's at the bottom of a deep grave with a broken ankle. The other three are, well, they're a long way away."
"You didn't kill them?"
"Of course not. This is my home. Why would I want them hanging around here for the rest of time? Look, it's okay. I dealt with them."
Scarlet took a step away from him.
"You aren't a person. People don't behave like you. You're as bad as he was. You're a monster."
Bard felt the blood drain from his face. After everything he had been through that night, after everything that had happened, this was somehow the hardest thing to take.
"No, it wasn't like that."
Scarlet began to back away from Bod. She took one step, two steps, and was about to flee, to turn and run madly, desperately away through the moonlit graveyard, when a tall man in black velvet put a hand on her arm.
"I am afraid you do Bod an injustice, but you will undoubtedly be happier if you remember none of this. So let us walk together, you and I, and discuss what has happened to you over the last few days, and what it might be wise for you to remember, and what it might be better for you to forget."
"Silas, you can't! You can't make her forget me!"
"It will be safest that way. For her, if not for all of us."
Don't I get a say in this?"
Silas said nothing. Bod took a step towards Scarlet.
"Look, it's over. I know it was hard, but we did it. You and me. We beat them."
Her head was shaking gently, as if she was denying everything she saw, everything she was experiencing. She looked up at Silas.
"I want to go home. Please."
Silas nodded. He walked with the girl down the path that would eventually lead them both out of the graveyard. Bard stared at Scarlet as she walked away, hoping that she would turn and look back, that she would smile, or just look at him without fear in her eyes. But Scarlet did not turn. She simply walked away. Bard went back into the mausoleum. He had to do something. So he began to pick up the fallen coffins to remove the debris, and to replace the tangle of tumbled bones into the coffins. Disappointed to discover that none of the many Frobishers and Frobishers and Pettifers gathered around to watch seemed to be quite certain whose bones belonged in which container. A man brought Scarlet home. Later, Scarlet's mother could not remember quite what he had told her, although, disappointingly, she had learned that that nice Jay Frost had unavoidably been forced to leave town. The man talked with them, in the kitchen, about their lives and their dreams, and by the end of the conversation, Scarlet's mother had somehow decided that they would be returning to Glasgow. Scarlet would be happy to be near her father and to see her old friends again. Silas left the girl and her mother talking in the kitchen. discussing the challenges of moving back to Scotland, with Nuna promising to buy Scarlet a phone of her own. They barely remembered that Silas had ever been there, which was the way he liked it. Silas returned to the graveyard and found Bod sitting in the amphitheatre by the obelisk, his face set.
How is she?
I took her memories. They will return to Glasgow. She has friends there.
How could you make her forget me?
People want to forget the impossible. It makes their world safer.
I liked her.
I'm sorry.
Bod tried to smile, but he could not find a smile inside himself.
The men. They spoke about trouble they were having in Krakow and Melbourne and Vancouver. That was you, wasn't it?
I was not alone.
Miss Lupescu?
Then, seeing the expression on his guardian's face...
Is she all right?
Silas shook his head, and for a moment his face was terrible for Bod to behold.
She fought bravely. She fought for you, Bod.
The Sleer has the Manjack. Three of the others went through the Ghoul Gate. There's one injured, but still alive at the bottom of the Carstairs grave.
He is the last of the Jacks. I will need to talk to him then, before sunrise.
The wind that blew across the graveyard was cold, but neither the man nor the boy seemed to feel it.
She was scared of me.
Yes.
But why? I saved her life. I'm not a bad person, and I'm just like her. I'm alive too. How did Miss Lupescu fall?
Bravely. In battle. Protecting others.
Bod's eyes were dark.
You could have brought her back here. Buried her here. Then I could have talked to her.
That was not an option.
Bod felt his eyes stinging.
She used to call me Nimini. No one will ever call me that again.
Shall we go and get food for you?
We? You want me to come with you? Out of the graveyard?
No one is trying to kill you. Not right now. There are a lot of things they are not going to be doing, not any longer. So, yes. What would you like to eat?
Bod thought about saying that he wasn't hungry, but that simply was not true. He felt a little sick and a little light-headed, and he was starving.
Pizza?
They walked through the graveyard down to the gates. As Bod walked, he saw the inhabitants of the graveyard, but they let the boy and his guardian pass among them without a word. They only watched. Bod tried to thank them for their help, to call out his gratitude, but the dead said nothing. The lights of the pizza restaurant were bright, brighter than Bod was comfortable with. He and Silas sat near the back and Silas showed him how to use a menu, how to order food. Silas ordered a glass of water and a small salad for himself, which he pushed around the bowl with his fork, but never actually put to his lips. Bod ate his pizza with his fingers, and enthusiasm. He did not ask questions. Silas would talk in his own time, or he would not.
We had known of them, of the Jacks, for a long, long time, but we knew of them only from the results of their activities. We suspected there was an organization behind it, but they hid too well. And then they came after you, and they killed your family. And slowly, I was able to follow their trail.
Is we, you and Miss Lupescu?
Us, and others like us.
The Honor Guard.
How did you hear about? No matter. Little pitchers have big ears, as they say. Yes. The honor guard.
Silas picked up his glass of water. He put the water glass to his lips, moistened them, then put it down on the polished black tabletop. The surface of the tabletop was almost mirrored, and had anyone cared to look, they might have observed that the tall man had no reflection.
So, now you're done. Done with all this. Are you going to stay?
I gave my word. I am here until you are grown.
I'm grown?
No. Almost. Not yet.
He put a 10-pound note down on the tabletop.
That girl, Scarlet. Why was she so scared of me, Silas?
But Silas said nothing, and the question hung in the air as the man and the youth walked out of the bright pizza restaurant into the waiting darkness. And soon enough, they were swallowed by the night. Chapter 8. Leavings and Partings. Sometimes he could no longer see the dead. It had begun a month or two previously, in April or in May. At first it had only happened occasionally, but now it seemed to be happening more and more. The world was changing. Bod wandered over to the northwestern part of the graveyard, to the tangle of ivy that hung from a yew tree and half-blocked the far exit from the Egyptian walk. He saw a red fox and a large black cat with a white collar and paws, who sat conversing together in the middle of the path. At Bod's approach, they looked up, startled, then fled into the undergrowth as if they had been caught conspiring.
Odd?
He had known that fox since it had been a cub. And the cat had prowled through the graveyard for as long as Bod could remember. They knew him. If they were feeling friendly, they even let him pet them. Bod started to slip through the ivy, but he found his way blocked. He bent down, pushed the ivy out of the way, and squeezed through. He walked down the path carefully, avoiding the ruts and holes, until he reached the impressive stone that marked the final resting place of Alonzo Tomas García Jones, 1837 to 1905. Traveller, lay down thy staff. Bod had been coming down here every few days for several months. Alonzo Jones had been all over the world, and he took great pleasure in telling Bod stories of his travels. He would begin by saying,
"Nothing interesting has ever happened to me."
Then would add gloomily,
"And I've told you all my tales."
And then his eyes would flash, and he would remark,
"Except, did I ever tell you about..."
And whatever the next words were,
"The time I had to escape from Moscow."
Or,
"The time I lost an Alaskan gold mine worth a fortune."
Or,
"The cattle stampede on the pampas."
Bod would always shake his head and look expectant, and soon enough his head would be swimming with tales of daring do and high adventure. Tales of beautiful maidens kissed, of evildoers shot with pistols or fought with swords, of bags of gold, of diamonds as big as the tip of your thumb, of lost cities and of vast mountains, of steam trains and clipper ships, of pampas, oceans, deserts, tundra. Bod walked over to the pointed stone, tall, carved with upside-down torches, and he waited, but saw no one. He called to Alonzo Jones, even knocked on the side of the stone, but there was no response. Bod leaned down to push his head into the grave and call his friend, but instead of his head slipping through the solid matter like a shadow passing through a deeper shadow, his head met the ground with a hard and painful thump. He called again, but saw nothing, and no one. And carefully he made his way out of the tangle of greenery and of grey stones and back to the path. Three magpies, perched in a hawthorn tree, took wing as he passed them. He did not see another soul until he reached the graveyard's southwestern slope, where the familiar shape of Mother Slaughter, tiny in her high bonnet and her cloak, could be seen walking between the gravestones, head bent, looking at wildflowers.
"Here, boy. There's nasturtiums growing wild over here. Why don't you pick some for me and put them over by my stone?"
So Bod picked the red and yellow nasturtiums, and he carried them over to Mother Slaughter's headstone, so cracked and worn and weathered that all it said now was, "Laugh," which had puzzled the local historians for over 100 years. He put down the flowers in front of the stone, respectfully. Mother Slaughter smiled at him.
"You're a good lad. I don't know what we'll do without you."
"Thank you. Where is everyone? You're the first person I've seen tonight."
Mother Slaughter peered at him sharply.
"What did you do to your forehead?"
"I bumped it, on Mr. Jones's grave. It was solid. I..."
But Mother Slaughter was pursing her lips and tilting her head. Bright old eyes scrutinized Bod from beneath her bonnet.
"I called you boy, didn't I? But time passes in the blink of an eye, and it's a young man you are now, isn't it? How old are you?"
"About 15. I think. Though I still feel the same as I always did."
"And I still feels like I done when I was a tiny slip of a thing, making daisy chains in the old pasture. You're always you, and that don't change. And you're always changing, and there's nothing you can do about it."
She sat down on her broken stone.
"I remember you the night you came here, boy. I says we can't let the little fella leave, and your mother agrees, and all of them starts arguing and whatnot until the lady on the grave rides up. 'People of the graveyard,' she says, 'listen to Mother Slaughter. Have you not got any charity in your bones?' And then all of them agreed with me."
She trailed off, shook her little head.
"There's not much happens here to make one day unlike the next. The seasons change, the ivy grows, stones fall over. But you coming here, well, I'm glad you did, that's all."
She stood up and pulled a grubby piece of linen from her sleeve, spat on it, and reached up as high as she could and scrubbed the blood from Bod's forehead.
"There. That ought to make you look presentable. Seeing as I don't know when next I'll see you, anyway. Keep safe."
Feeling discomforted in a way he could not remember having felt before, Bod made his way back to the Owens's tomb, and was pleased to see both of his parents waiting for him beside it. As he got closer, his pleasure turned into concern. Why did Mr. and Mrs. Owens stand like that, arranged on each side of the tomb like characters from a stained-glass window? He could not read their faces. His father took a step forward.
"Evening, Bod. I trust you're keeping well."
tolerably well.
Which was what Mr. Owens always said to his friends when they asked him the same question.
Mistress Owens and